Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Black Free Thinkers on Blog Talk Radio. This is Kim, your host, and today we have Mario Dorsey from the Black Nonbelievers of Atlanta as our guest host, and our featured guest today is Mr. Donald Wright, the author of The Only Prayer I'll Ever Pray is Let My People Go. You know, two very dynamic personalities, and I've been looking forward to this, you know, for a while now. And, again, we're Black Free Thinkers. We are here to challenge you to think and live for yourself, not convert you. And we just want to welcome everybody here today. And I just wanted to give you all a couple of quotes from Mr. Wright in his book. One quote is, "Truth is clarity. To seek the truth, require it, and acquire it, and fail to act on it is a travesty." And another quote is, "It takes courage to act on truth, especially when alone." So, again, we want to thank them. And Mario and Mr. Wright, you're both on the line, so you're live. So thank you for being here today.
Thank you very much,
Jim.
How's it going, Mario?
I'm all right. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Great.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So thank you. You know, we appreciate it. We've been looking forward to this. And you know, I definitely had to tell those two quotes because we are actually running a campaign that starts officially August 1st. You are not alone. And, you know, we're just trying to get the word out there to people to let them know that they are not alone. There are more of us out here than they probably realize, and that we're here to be a support base to them, to, you know, encourage them, to motivate them, to keep pushing on, and that it's okay not to believe. It really is, and it's more of us that are, you know, being awakened and coming into that realization and evolving into, you know, free thought in whatever capacity that you place yourself in that. So, you know, thank you again, you know, because this is a great book. If you all haven't had a chance to get it, definitely go over to Amazon because it's available, and it's about 100 pages. He gives some insight, and, yeah, just go ahead and get it. It's a pretty good read here, so I think you all will enjoy it. So, saying that, you know, basically, Mr. Wright, you know, one of the questions that I have, you know, because as I read your book again yesterday, because I read it last year, I heard you on Reggie's show, the Infidel Guy show,
right. And
I enjoyed it so much, and I'm like, I have to get this guy on the show, you know, because you know, we weren't able to really, you know, talk with you then, because, you know, we were listening in, and it was just, you know, very inspiring. But what I find interesting here is, you said here that you ate the forbidden fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil in 2002 and finally made your escape in 2006. Now, what happened? What transpired in those 4 years to just solidify that?
Well, the most significant thing was the disappointing experience of an incident at the church that I was attending at the time, which happened to be the same church that I was a deacon there for a few years. And the incident that I'm referring to is in relation to the pastor that was caught in a homosexual scandal. And it really caused a major disturbance in the church. And so the church was very evenly divided, although I was pretty shocked about that. So we had a major meeting, had a vote about it, and by a slight majority, the obviously the majority wanted to keep him as the pastor. And I was very disturbed at that time about it, only because I did not, as a practicing Christian, I did not view homosexuality as an acceptable lifestyle. And I didn't view that as an acceptable lifestyle, particularly for a pastor or a church leader. So after that meeting, immediately following that evening, my family and I, we made a decision to go find another church. But in the process, as I made a decision to find another church, I made a decision to become a more a greater student of the Bible and of the Christian religion. And what happened after that was my freedom, because the more I studied, the more I analyzed things, the more it became more diluted, and the message became more diluted and polluted. And I gathered more questions that the Bible couldn't answer, and I ran across the many contradictions that exist in the Bible. And so it just, the more questions I developed, the more I became more informed from the standpoint of this must not be truth, and therefore why should we be following this? And so in 2006, I read The Age of Reason by Thomas Paine, and that was it. After I read that, that was the sledgehammer that unlocked my chains. So after that, I haven't been to church since, and it's just been a growth pattern ever since September 2006.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, definitely. I believe, you know, we can all relate to that, whereas, you know, whether it was some type of isolated incident or several incidents, or just looking at the contradictions not only in the Bible but the contradictions in the lives of the believers, because so in many cases, when you look at their lives, you know, you see a big, you know, contradiction. And that goes back to, you know, a quote in your book on page 20. You said a contradiction is a stumbling block to truth.
Right.
And definitely, you know, it's a distorted reality, you know, not only from the, you know, the Bible that they teach. And, you know, again, you talked about that as well. The Bible that they teach, the gospel that's taught in these churches, is totally different than the gospel you read when you actually sit down to read the Bible itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, twisted and manipulated in such a way that it's conducive to their prosperity. I used to tell people all the time, isn't it interesting that the only person that's prospering is the pastor and his cronies? That the believers that have been tithing and giving and having faith and praying and all of that, their lives seem not to be prospering. They seem not to be moving on in their lives. You know, what happened to this so-called deliverance thing? You know, I don't see any changes in their lives. And that was one of the motivating factors for me, not seeing any changes in people's lives. And that comes because I'm a preacher's kid. So I saw a lot of, you know, up close and personal. And then, you know, around 11, 12, I started questioning the Bible and kind of went against the grain there. But when I became a young adult, like in my mid-20s, I tried to go back because everybody seemed like they were so happy.
Right,
and I said, well, some of the happiness, you know, what's going on over here? And I tried it, and I rose to a leadership position, you know, very quickly. A lot of people may not know, but I am an ordained minister.
Okay.
And, yeah, and I saw too much. They just allowed me to see way too much. And the icing on the cake was when I went to a Word of Faith church. And after that experience there, it was over. I was like, no, I can't do this anymore, because what they don't realize that they're doing, especially in these prosperity Word of Faith churches, is they're teaching people that God is not sovereign. If you if you want to help people transition out of Christianity into free thought, send them to a Word of Faith church and encourage them to read the Bible. Because if you can control God and he has to do what you tell him to do, because, you know, you're the child and he has to do and the Holy Spirit has to follow your instructions. And nothing ever comes of those instructions, and he never does what you – that right there will push you right out the door. And, you know, as I was, you know, studying the Bible and listening to what they were saying, that's what truly, truly pushed me out, and I just – I've never turned back since then. So
– well, I find it I mean, I'm really excited about talking with you and hope to get to meet you someday, because I've been wanting to have a lengthy conversation with a person of color, of African American, that has that was in ministry or an ordained minister that walked away. I haven't had a chance to meet a person that's such yet, and I've been wanting to do that because I just like to hear that experience and understand the steps that they went through to make that change, and then to also hear the response and the reactions to people that have that you have confronted after making the change. So, I'm looking forward to knowing and meeting and learning more about you.
You too, sir. You're in the Dallas area, aren't you?
Pardon?
I said, are you in the Dallas area?
Oh, I'm in Houston.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're in Houston? Excellent, excellent. So, whenever I'm in the Texas, particularly Houston area, I'll let you know, definitely. And, I mean, even beyond that, you know, we can still interact before I get a chance to visit. But,
right.
Yeah, definitely we can, you know, talk about that because, again, that's a conversation that needs to be had as well, which
right.
is why, you know, I invite Christians to listen to this show and I interact with a lot of Christians because, basically, you know, I want to know, you know, where they are because you can kind of tell in their conversation. I truly believe that there are a lot of Christians that go to church or they call themselves Christians, but they're really free thinkers because, by nature, most black people are skeptical.
Mm-hmm.
They really are, and they don't know what to call themselves, but yet then they fear that hell and brimstone damnation and, you know, being convicted by the Holy Spirit that they've been brainwashed into believing. And so they're afraid to walk away, and usually by the time you get done pointing out a lot of the, you know, logical fallacies that they like to follow, it boils down to Pascal's wager. They'll tell you basically that they'd rather believe and be wrong than not believe and move on.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, the mindset.
Yeah.
You know, I read something in which it was told that basically the church has to provide three things. It has to provide a problem, which is original sin. You're born jacked up from the beginning.
Yeah.
It has to provide a solution, which is the church or the Bible itself, come to us to be forgiven, to be healed, to be given a solution to what your problem is, which is basically being human. And the third is the consequences for not coming to them, which is hell, fire, and brimstone. So
mm-hmm.
if you keep hitting people across the head with those three things, come to us because you have a problem. If you don't, God is going to punish you. And you keep hearing that from childhood, people, you know, you have no, it's almost like you're brainwashed into believing this, and that's one of the reasons why it's so hard for people to let go of all that.
Well, it's such a powerful, authoritative position to grow up and know that your parents have accepted this message. And so at a very early age, they basically have pounded this into you. And as a parent, you become very authoritative with your children. I mean, that's the way I was with my daughter. The point becomes is that you certainly have to impose. Well, you don't have to, but in most cases, you're going to impose a certain position or certain attitudes or certain principles upon your children. And they
right.
accept those in authoritative position. And what occurs with that is a certain amount of fear that transpires. And therefore,
right.
as long as that's there, then that fear is going to maintain that attitude. And I know there are people now that have read about my story or people that I've talked to, and they understand the position that I took and why I did what I did, but it's their fear that prevents them from doing the same thing. And that's because
right.
the fear is so ingrained until yeah. they have no way of really having that that extra strength that can allow them
right.
to move beyond that. And that's why it's so important for us as free thinkers and non-believers that I encourage us to be more outspoken. We should be willing
right.
to talk about it. We've got to be visible. And so more people can see that you can live this life without the dogma of religion.
Right.
Exactly. Just like in your book, you know, you said here, you are safe, secure, and entitled to everlasting life as long as you don't open your mind to question the Bible's origins and its content.
Mm-hmm.
And now, the Lord, you said, opening your mind may allow credulity to escape. The people that thrive on your membership that constitutes more monetary donations cannot afford for you to be inquisitive. Blind faith is a must. Religion is a system by which humans devise answers to unanswerable questions and use that system to control and manipulate the thoughts and actions of other human beings. And that is the honest to goodness truth.
Is that,
yeah.
you know, you take people like Jim Jones and David Koresh, and that's a result of what blind faith can do, and what you're trusting that this guy really knows, and he has a direct line to God, and God is really commanding this guy to tell you to do something. You stop thinking for yourself and become more of an automaton and just do what you're told until the point where you end up doing something you shouldn't have done.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times there's a very horrible consequence.
Well, there's so much there's so much pain here, and
mm-hmm. yeah,
I mean, there's a lot of pain out here with this, and then there's so much harm and so much manipulation and
yeah.
exploitation and oppression that are taking place, mm-hmm. and so one of the things about what I went through, and the reason why the Age of Reason made such a difference for me is because it really made me see things in its clarity, in its truth.
Right.
And I the night that I finished reading it, tears flowed. And
wow.
and I think what's incredible about that is that it was just a tear, and it was just the tears of so much. It was a kind of freedom that I had never experienced before in my life.
Yeah,
and
liberation. That's right.
Exactly. That's,
yeah.
that's exactly right. And I it's hard for me to explain it to people, but the idea that the fact that when you can acquire that, and particularly if you can do it alone, which is what I did,
yeah.
then, I mean, when I say alone, I know I've read other people's, but I'm talking about I didn't have anybody here in Houston that I was being able to talk with and consult about it. I couldn't find anyone.
Yes, sir.
Right.
Believe me, you're telling, we've all been in that boat. And so
oh,
go
yeah.
ahead, please. So, no, we understand. We definitely understand. You know, and that's a very hard path to take.
Mm-hmm.
You dare
right.
take the path least traveled and go against
right.
the grain, because one of the issues that the church has with, you know, those of us that are in, you know, into free thought is that our nonconformity, because
mm-hmm.
they want
right. oh,
they want little clones of them. And, you know, going back to your book here, you know, you were talking about on page 65 when you were talking about basically it says here the condition of blacks in America can simply be described as being physically free but mentally enslaved. This only makes
right.
true freedom illusion. Institutions such as our government, monetary system, and religion create these illusions, and it is very difficult to distinguish their identity. And, you know, I tied that in with when you were talking about here, you were talking about, I'm looking for it on my notes here, you were just talking about cognition.
Mm.
And how basically, you know, and I call it superiority illusory, which basically what it is. And, you know, for my psychologist in the role, you know, you would look it up and it would be more so along the lines of the Dunning-Kruger effect. And, you know, I know people are saying, why am I harping on that? The reason why I harp on that is because people are making very bad and very foolish decisions based on faulty and fraudulent information, and it is dangerous.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
Yeah. And one of the things that I, as I continue this walk, and I definitely know that I'm new to this after 2006. So there are certain things that obviously I still do that are of a religious nature, but I do it only because of my so-called respect for other people. For instance, like, I went to a funeral yesterday, and my neighbor's sister died, and I did that just out of showing respect for her family, and being a neighbor, right? So I subjected myself to this horrible environment, right? I mean, I'm sitting there, and it's just, I mean, I don't, it's difficult to sit through all that now. But I did it just because I wanted to show respect to them, to the family, and my neighbor. So I'm sitting there, but I'm observing what's taking place, and these people are constantly being conditioned to a certain state in life that they have no understanding of its reality. And one of the things that is the reason why I promote so much confusion is the fact that Monday, or whenever they go within another different type of environment, they are going to go into what's called a democratic society. But every Sunday, they go to a dictatorship or a tyrannical environment.
There you go.
Right.
Exactly.
And so they have no way of understanding that their confusion is being enhanced every week, and they cannot make freedom typing decisions because they aren't capable.
Right.
Exactly. Exactly. Remember those old grandfather laws? And basically, with the old grandfather laws, in particularly the car dealerships, it used to be a law that the car dealerships couldn't be open on Sundays because people would go to church, get excited, and then go to the car dealership and buy vehicles that couldn't afford, or either walk in there and tell them that Jesus told them to give them a car. You know,
right.
So, so it's interesting. But, no, I understand perfectly what you're saying because, you know, every once in a while I will go to church, you know, to support a friend or what have you. But, you know, I understand when you're sitting there, when I go to church now, it's more like, you know, watching a clinical trial, like observing. Because
right.
It turns into like a science experiment.
Right.
And I'm sitting there and I'm watching, you know, how the pastors soak the people's emotions. And, you know, one of the young men in the chat room today, Terry Shedd, we were just discussing this on a thread on Facebook. And, you know, the brainwashing process, the hypnosis.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell people the music and the lighting and the constant repetition,
yeah.
There are other things that, you know, that they put forth. They are brainwashing you, and then don't let it be a certain time of the year. They keep it hot in that church on purpose because they know it's going to. I mean, it's absolute. But these people know exactly what they're doing. They know exactly what they're doing. And in your book, you were talking about, and I'll quote you, religion imposes on human behavior by influencing a human's imagination, thus altering their reality. And then you started talking about how hell is more vivid than heaven to believers. And I agree with that because it seems as though, you know, they talk about the devil more than they talk about Jesus. It's like the devil is some type of, you know, superhero for them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you tell them that and you point it out, they act like they don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think one of the things that has become pretty consistent with my experiences with people now is that when I have the opportunity to get into conversations or discussions about it, which is not that often because most people don't want to talk about things of merit, of matter. They rather talk about the NFL strike or something like that. But one of the things that became pretty interesting to me is that when I'm discussing this matter with people, And what I do is that I allow them whatever position they want to take on God, because I have no way of trying to discuss that or even debate it, because it is such an abstract condition for me. But I take the position of, but I will discuss the Bible. And
yes,
so
sir, that's right.
If your position about God is strictly from the Bible, then let's talk about the Bible. And so
exactly.
But most people aren't willing to do that because they've never studied it. And therefore they can't
right.
defend the position. They just accept that the preacher told them it's God's word and that's all it takes.
Right.
Exactly. You, Mara, did you want to say something about that?
Well, you know, I always tell people never to use the Bible in a theist versus a non-believer debate, because for every scripture that believer throws out, there are at least two or three other scriptures that completely either contradict it or tear it down.
Uh-huh.
And so it's a waste of time to use the Bible as an argumentative point to show how right God or the Bible is, especially since the Bible is very historically inaccurate to begin with. And from things I've read, they don't even have the complete manuscript of the original Bible to begin with. So you got people translating fragments and passing that down for hundreds of thousands of years to the point where nobody knows what was the original message in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
you know, you just have people who are going by this guy says that this book says this, and what this says is what God means, you know, and they always pick and choose a particular scriptures for the message that they want to convey that weekend. They never talk about the ones that actually tell how truly diabolical God can be, you know.
Right.
But you take upon yourself in which I can't remember his name. He was told to destroy the Amalekites and everything. It's synopsizing that passage is like, go in there and kill everything in there. I don't
mm-hmm.
want anything alive in there. You know what I'm saying? I mean, and you got to think, I mean, this is the God that is supposed to be our Savior, but he does not have a problem with massacre at all. And I talked to some people about, you know, the Israelites and whatnot, how God blatantly said, of all the people he created, this group of people right here are my favorites. So I'm going to do my best to get them out of slavery. Not abolish slavery. Not end slavery. Not remove everybody from slavery. Let's get them out of slavery. Slavery was continued before, during, and after that.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't change anything for anyone else except the Israelites. And then I look up on Facebook and I see all these blessed and highly favored. No, you're not. No, you're not. You cannot.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, not according to the Bible that they read, so it's pretty amazing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Most people don't realize that before the Civil Rights Act that everyone likes to quote now, there was one before. It was in 1875, and Mr. Wright had this in his book, and that particular civil rights bill was struck down as unconstitutional by the Supreme Court in 1883.
Right.
And the state of Mississippi only abolished slavery in 1995. You know, this is the type of stuff that people need to know and they need to understand. But, you know, Mario is right. You know, they walk around saying that they're blessed and highly favored, but yet the whole system is designed to keep them poor. The
mm-hmm.
whole system is designed
mm-hmm.
to keep them poor. And like lately, you know, and I'm just going to tie this in basically with the mortgage industry, what happened when, you know, we had the little mortgage bubble, and what's happening now with the, you know, what's a recession in certain cultures? It's a depression in ours. And basically, they have created an environment in which any wealth or quite a bit of the wealth that was acquired by, you know, people in our community, it was pretty much snatched and taken away. And I agree with Mr. Wright when he was saying that basically he was trying to, he was hoping that the election of Obama would basically, with his election, that he would kind of squash a little bit of this religious dogma. But he hasn't done that. You know, in his book, he talks about how Obama has five spiritual advisors. And, of course, you know, those particular people are profiting from that. And true, but I believe Obama was elected or handpicked or chosen for a reason. Because with the economic and the housing, you know, issues that we're having now, it has created quite a bit of a disparity and a lot of frustration. And they're trying to squash any type of real revolt. They don't want the people out in the street protesting about what's really happening nowadays because, again, you know, there was already a hardship, but now it's an even bigger hardship. It's interesting, you know, the dynamics behind all of this. But, yeah, you know, did you know that Obama's mother was an atheist? Well, both his parents were, his mother and his father. They were both atheists.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, boy.
It was the stranglehold that religion has on everything. I mean, I look up on a lot of the Republican candidates, and every time we look around, they're saying God told them to run, and God is telling them this, God is telling them that. You know, it's like that has become the cry that they use is like, hey, you, look, you should vote for me because God said so. You know, so. I mean, it's become a part of the gamut, you know?
Yeah, that's happening with our Texas governor right now. As he's going to have this big prayer meeting on next Saturday. And he's been talking about it. He thinks he's been called. So that's kind of very similar to the message George Bush gave us. He has this big meeting scheduled for Saturday at the Reliance Center where he's asking people to pray for the nation and because God is what's going to heal us. So it's supposed to be a bunch of people here. I'm going to go, but I'm going to protest. So I think it's pretty sad. But that's just a reflection of the state that religion has moved into in the past 30 years, I imagine, and I think that's from the influence of the religious right, in which the black church has been influenced considerably from that, I think. Which is pretty sad, but then again, I mean, that's what religion does. It puts you in a guilt state of mind. And when people are saying those things that you are supposed to agree with, then you have to take the same stance with them.
Right.
Exactly.
Mario, you from Atlanta, right?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Are you familiar with the AtlantaPost.com?
I believe I am. Yeah, it's been a while since I've read anything like
okay.
that.
Okay. Well, just recently they had a post on there called Seven Political Issues That the Black Church Has Been Silent About.
Oh, yeah.
And it was written by a guy named Anthony Jarrett.
Uh-huh.
And these seven issues. Pardon?
I said that was a good article. It hit some points. They missed some, but they hit quite a few points.
It hit some points, but what's interesting about it, I'm going to read some sentences from the first couple of paragraphs. He says, history has shown us that morality cannot be legislated. It may be tempting to certain individuals to solve America's moral decline with partisan politics, but the real solution is the gospel. He says, through godly living, prayer, faithful teaching, and standing on the truth, present-day believers can once again become the conscience of our communities and affect positive change instead of government intervention and public policies. So I have to draw the conclusion that Mr. Jarrett is a Christian.
Yeah.
Exactly. And the reason why I think articles like that are good for, you know, for them to publish and to be out there is because it gives us an idea of these people's mindset. And it affords us the ability to form, you know, more solid arguments. Because, I mean, any of us can easily refute, you know, Mr. Jarrett. Because, again, this is not a theocracy, even though they're trying to turn this country into a theocracy. But right. Look at what religion has done. You know, some of the more religious countries, they have the highest crime rates. And you hit on that in your book as well, when you were talking about Norway and Denmark being, you know, two of the least religious, countries, and how they're thriving economically, socially, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, while I may not necessarily agree with the content or his biased opinion, you know, the reason why I like articles like that is because, again, it helps me formulate, you know, my arguments and basically form them in a way that I know that they can't be refuted. And, you know, generally, I want them to think. Again, like I said, my thing is to challenge people to think. I want you to think about what you're saying, because there have been a couple of people that, you know, we've been able to kind of convince, you know, that what they're following is basically, like I say, badly plagiarized mythology.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. I think it would be very, I think the challenge here is to make sure that they understand that these are things the church never will solve. The church been around for a long time and hasn't solved them. Why do we think they're going to solve them at some point? The church doesn't have the ability to solve these problems.
No, it doesn't.
Go ahead, Mario.
You know, as much as they try to tell us that God is the answer to all our problems, you know, a lot of the people who were in charge of this country hundreds of years ago did, in fact, believe in God and, yeah, solved their problems and got rid of Indians and enslaved African Americans. So, it's interesting that the interpretation and the belief and the idea of what God would do is pretty much based on the person who's saying it. It's not because that's what they would do. If they had the power, that's what they would do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they say that God, gays are an abomination, that guy is saying, if I had the power, I would eliminate all gays. That's what he's saying. Because, you know, that's all it's about. These people, especially church leaders, they use the word of God to reinforce their own beliefs, and people follow that because it's theoretically coming from the word of God.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And truth be told, this is just my personal opinion, observation, they don't want the people to become better. There's no such thing as deliverance. There never was. And a lot of these preachers up there, they know better. They know that these people will never be delivered from certain things. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. You can overcome that, you know, with a lot of work and a lot of dedication, but you can't be delivered from that type of thing. But I truly believe that they don't want the people to get better, because while the people are continuously under a state of arrested development, they're easily controllable and manipulated. And that's the only way that these people will be able to make money. So they don't want you to get better because, you know, ironically, they'll tear you down in one sentence and then build you up on another. And that is basically the foundation of the gospel. You're a rag, you know, you're a dirty rag, and you're all of these filthy and evil things, but Jesus loves you.
Right.
And it's just interesting because, again, you know, that's something that you would do in an abusive relationship. In a lot of abusive relationships, you'll have the mate or whomever who will tear you down, but then on the other hand, try to build you up. And that's a mechanism of trying to break someone down, rebuild them into the image that you want them to be. And that is one of the basic tenets of religion. And that's one of the reasons why it's so dangerous. Some of the behaviors that we see, you know, you see a lot of drug, alcohol, sex abuse within the church. But my thing is, why can't we get to the root of the problem? Instead of telling them that Jesus will fix it, Jesus will be your doctor, and you alluded to that in your book when you were talking about the altered reality, how they basically transformation, and I like to call it more along the lines of transubstantiation. With the transubstantiation in the Catholic Church, that's when they give you the communion, and so basically that cracker or bread really becomes the body of Jesus, and that wine or grape juice really becomes his blood. The same thing happens in these churches in which they'll tell the people to see the God in them. The pastor is saying that. And because of how the human psyche works, they personify it. Mm-hmm. So they start seeing that preacher or pastor as God or Jesus himself, which is why a lot of these pastors get away with some of the things that they get away with. But while I do kind of blame the pastors, I kind of put the blame right back on the laity for the simple fact that the pastor can only get away with what the laity allows. The parishioners have to realize that they are really the ones in control. They can stop.
Mm-hmm. But it's difficult, and the reason why it's difficult because we all are a victim of our society, and so we are all being manipulated and institutionalized in some form or fashion, and we all have to be hopeful that we can break free of those at some point in our lives. Otherwise, one of those institutions is going to still manipulate and control us. So within the framework of religion, what happened is that you are institutionalized from religion, but you also institutionalized educationally. And so
yes,
if those same two institutions are not really teaching you how to think, then how will you ever learn how to do that? And so a person that's sitting in church on Sunday, when he's going to work or going to school, he doesn't ever think because he's not taught.
Right.
And so that individual will never learn to figure out what is the right thing for him based on the information
right.
that he can gather because he's at the mercy of the institutions. And that's
right.
I just realized this in the past few years. I mean, because I'm an engineer, but I was institutionalized in my education.
That's
and
right.
I had
right.
and I've had to break free from a lot of that just by getting into my own engineering firm. So we are so victimized, and that's why I do agree that the pastors are, I know the pastors are more of the problem. I'd say the pastors are more of a problem than the people because the people are just victims. But the pastor knows better, but he's abusing it for his own benefit.
Oh, yeah, definitely. He's benefiting, you know, abusing, you know, the people as well as his position. Abuse of power, basically.
Right,
what it is.
Right.
And it happens quite a bit. And, you know, what I'm seeing now with a lot of these churches is the pastorship, the leadership positions have become a haven for, you know, ex-cons or pedophiles and all of that. And, you know, an ex-con, anyone who's made a mistake in the past, they deserve a second chance. I'm definitely, you know, I'm big on giving people second chances. But a lot of people take those positions to exploit other
mm-hmm.
people, to take the money and, you know, to hurt them. Because, you know, going back to the money thing, in your book you were talking about basically professional deceivers, and you're right. And I've heard pastors call themselves actors.
Oh, boy.
And they know they're acting. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, when you were talking about how people are taught to forgive pastors, you know, and their fallibilities and all of that, but the pastor isn't necessarily always forgiving of people when they don't do what he wants. Or, you know, or basically just kind of just lay down and be his little doormat.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because in Sikibu's book, she was talking about tithing as well, and she basically called it embezzlement, extortion, misappropriation
right.
of funds, and it robs its members. And that is the ultimate truth. And it really doesn't help, but they know exactly what they're doing, and that's why they cultivate that us versus them type of culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you're right, and, you know, when you were talking in your book about how these pastors exploit women's, you know, emotions, they exploit their desires and insecurities as well, because, you know, men, for the most part, do recognize the pimp gang, and I believe that women do too, but some women are so desperate for attention, for recognition, for validation. And, I mean, there are some men like that out there as well, so I can't just put it all on women. But
right.
these pastors, they definitely take advantage of that. And, you know, again, it's about them
mm-hmm.
creating their own wealth.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well,
go ahead.
we all must be able to take an opportunity to examine the culture in which we live, and we should have the courage to criticize it. And one of the things about that is that our culture tends to our culture and society leads us into a certain way of thinking. And so what happens is that our culture teaches us that men are supposed to provide the security for the women in its essence. And but that doesn't have anything to do with the women's liberation aspect in which I thoroughly support. But within the culture there is this sense that the men are to be the providers and the security mechanism. And so when women buy into that, then they are looking for that from some means or some fashion that when they realize that they are lacking in certain things, the chances are that they may be looking for it, for those provisions, through some guy or some man in some mechanism. And our culture has promoted that. And I certainly hope that changed. I'm certainly trying to help my daughter to understand that that's not a necessary way of life.
Exactly.
But these are the things So we're all a victim of these things. But
right.
How do we break free? We break free by us helping one another learn to look at things a little differently.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
Right.
And Terry Shedd said in a room, he said, I don't think that's true to everybody. I tend to believe that pastors are victims themselves. I think at that point when they do have that doubt that what they're doing is harmful, they are too ingrained in this thinking and they believe it is thought from the devil and they cling to their faith in order to lead the masses. And to a certain degree, kind of agree with that. And Daniel Dennett did a study on atheism in a pulpit. And it was actually a very good study in which he spoke with different, you know, pastors, priests, what have you, and him and Linda Descola, and she's a sociologist. And basically they discovered that there are quite a few atheists in the pulpit, but they can't admit it because, again, to many of them, it's a career.
Mm-hmm.
And they have other marketable skills. So if they were to leave the church, what exactly would they do? And a good example for that would be Ted Haggard.
After
he was ousted from his own church, him and his family pretty much became destitute and homeless, and that's why he turned around and opened a new church. And it's amazing to me because he knew what he was up there preaching and teaching, but yet he was, you know, living a double life. And I see that a lot in these churches, you know, that, you know, schizoid behavior. But when you read the Bible and you see the behavior of their alleged God there, you know, he comes across as rather schizophrenic as well, especially when you compare the Old Testament and the New Testament.
Mm-hmm.
And when you point that out to them, you know, again, you know, you're of the devil. You're the devil. And it's just, you know, after a while, you're ready to kind of just bang your head against the wall. Because you're sitting there, you're like, I know you see this. I know you understand what's happening. And you see what the pastor is doing to you. You know, you're supposed to forgive him and everyone else, but yet he's putting you on blast across the pulpit. And you come back the next Sunday and give him your money, and you're okay with them dragging your name through the mud. But the minute you say something about the pastors, judge not or touch not. And I just sit back and I'm looking at the people, and I've had several conversations, you know, many Christians, they don't even bother to talk to me anymore. You know, we'll talk about everything but religion. And, you know, going back to, you know, something that you had said earlier about how, you know, Christians pretty much avoid us and won't talk to us. As a matter of fact, they really won't even talk to people outside their church, let alone their denominations.
Mm-hmm.
And I take it all the way back to, you know, their pastors or their leaders and then back to them as well, because they are not equipped to talk to people outside of the church. They don't know their scriptures or their Bibles well enough to discuss it. And in your book, you were talking about how they quote the Gospel of Paul. They pretty much quote Paul on everything. And I noticed that many, many years ago that it became all about Paul, and many of them don't even realize that Paul was Gnostic. So it, what he was putting out there, he knew it was a perverted type of gospel, and he never referred to Jesus. He never referred to Jesus as well. In your book, you said, you know, he believed that you believed that Jesus was a figment of his imagination. And
right.
I can't agree with that.
You know, I always wonder, you know, I ask somebody, you know, how we don't look at Scientology, and we see Scientology as a religion that a dude made up. So I'm like, well, how can you how come you can't apply that to the same to religions out here?
Right.
I mean, you know,
right.
The same thing can hold. You know what I'm saying? As far as you know, Moses was high as a kite when he saw that burning bush. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You know, I mean, yeah. I mean, you know, and we think about that. I'm like, so how come, you know, we're thinking about this rationally now. You know what I'm saying? Have some guys could have been doped out their mind when they saw the things that they saw, and we're gonna believe that they saw that mess.
Right.
But they take it as though, yeah, this actually happened. And I even asked somebody, like, they'll say Jesus died for our sins. I'm like, well, how do you know? Like, because the Bible said it. Well, how do you know that guy was telling the truth? Well, I have faith. So you don't have any proof that it actually happened. You believe a guy who believed the guy who believed the guy who interpreted from a guy who interpreted from a guy who believed the guy that this happened, but there's no way to prove it. There's no evidence at all that any of this ever happened, but you believe it wholeheartedly without shadow of a doubt that there was another guy who was supposed to save you, although he got himself killed.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
Exactly.
It
exactly.
makes sense. You know, it's crazy.
Well, it's interesting, too. There's so many things to think about with this stuff. And that's why, I mean, when I have the opportunity to talk to the religious people, and I'm not just talking about Christians. I mean, I'll talk to any of them. And so,
yes, sir.
But from the standpoint of Christianity, what's pretty amazing is that, and I read this, too, that they was talking about how religions, particularly how Christianity, kind of looked down on suicide. Well, there's an analogy here that you can look at that, well, let's see, if Jesus was God and all powers in his hand, then he basically committed suicide because he could have prevented it.
There you go.
Yeah.
I present that to Christians all the time.
Right.
And if it was to kill, I would have been dead 100 times over
right.
by now. You know,
and
what he
did. And another thing is, they talk about how adultery is an abomination. They like to skip over that part.
Right.
And, you know, adultery is an abomination. I'm like, but, you know, Joseph and Mary were married when God impregnated Mary. I mean, you don't, technically, he should kill himself then, shouldn't he? You know?
Right.
You know?
Right.
I mean,
so many of those analogies apply, and so, but they can conveniently ignore that, and that's
right.
that's what's so sad here. But when you look at Paul is such a perfect example for them to do basically a lot of things here, and I think the most important message about Paul, well, actually, there's a couple of messages about Paul's life that's written in the Bible. Now, whether it's true or not, most likely it's not. But the message is pretty clear. And the message is, first of all, he was a criminal or a hitman. Okay? So he was out killing Christians. And then he saw the light, and his life changed. Okay? So all of a sudden, because of this, he becomes an apostle. Now,
exactly.
According to the Bible, nobody else in the Bible acknowledged him. None of the other boys acknowledge him being an apostle, but Paul himself and his buddy Luke, and so that's how he became the apostle. Now, then, what takes place here explains why anybody can anoint themselves to say, "I've been called and therefore I'm authorized to be the pastor of this church. Because that's what Paul did.
Exactly.
Right.
So they're just duplicating someone in the Bible that did this, and they are authorized to do it within their own concept. And,
right.
But
exactly.
Yet still they won't. Our fellow brothers and sisters won't examine this.
No, they won't. They won't. They won't even consider the fact that, you know, there was nobody else around that time period, nobody in the next town, no one around who was, like, not killing Christians that he could have chosen.
Right.
You know?
Right. Exactly. It's absolutely amazing. And, you know, when you try to show them the logic in all of this, you know, they just call you the devil and move on, and they just have to believe what they, you know, want to believe. And Terry was talking in the chat room when he was saying basically that they base their entire lives upon their belief in their faith system. And that goes back to a point in your book where you said Christianity is a way of life as opposed to a religion, and that's what they are being taught. They masterfully change that around and change Christianity from being a religion to a way of life, because you'll hear a bunch of Christians tell you that it's a way of life. And by having that type of mindset, that sets them up and why they kind of wallow in being a victim. So they have that victim persecution mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes it difficult to deal with them and even to chastise them and scold them when they are wrong. Because, you know, in many cases, they're, you know, willing participants in their victimhood. So let's just say a Christian made an offense towards you. Well, you're supposed to forgive them. But then let's say you make an offense towards them, then you're going to hell because you touched one of God's anointed.
Right.
So it's a lose-lose type of situation. But if they do it, well, you know, God was in their heart. You know what was in their heart. They didn't mean to hurt. It's amazing. You know, what happened to personal responsibility, personal accountability? And in some kind of way, they are able to find loopholes behind that because they see themselves as a victim. And that's why I talk a lot about that arrested development, because in many cases when you're dealing with people, it feels as though you are dealing with an 11, 12, 13-year-old, and it makes it hard to trust them.
Well, you know, I'm not even certain they believe as much as they even think they do, because, you know, with the American atheists, they pointed out something about the cross from the World Trade Center, how disrespectful it is that you're going to put up a symbol of one religion when there are many religions from the people who died in the World Trade Center, which makes a lot of sense when you think about it. Because, you know, if they put up a symbol of, let's say, a black people had a flag, and they put up that flag, there'd be people pissed off all across the board because not just black people died in the World Trade Center.
Right.
If you substitute any group you want for that same thing, it makes plenty of sense. But because Christians feel like they're the ones being attacked, they're making death threats against the American Atheist Society. Blair Scott got his tires slashed.
Oh wow!
Yeah. So it's like, they're making death threats. I think it's on their website or something. You can see the death threats being made. I'm like, you know, if your God is all powerful, why are we still here? You know what I'm saying? Like, theoretically, if you believe that everything is in God's plan, shouldn't you just shut up and let things happen?
Right.
You
know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Yeah, that's my position and argument when it comes to this prayer thing. See, I just don't. You're wasting time. I mean, if he's in control, then let him do his thing, man. And you just go.
Yeah.
You go where you need to go. And the idea that they think that they can manipulate and change this powerful God's perspective and his mind just by praying to him is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's pretty sad, and I mean I can say that with emphasis because I used to do it. But it's such a it's such delusion, and it's sad when I think about the fact that I used to do that stuff.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
But you're right. I mean, we've all gone through that, and you know, as I've explained to other people, you know, at least in on my path, on my journey into free thought, I had to deprogram myself from a lot of things, and still to this day, I'm still deprogramming myself from a lot of the religious indoctrination.
Oh, yeah.
And it's hard. It's
right.
very hard. And you, when people, I've had people, you know, come at me from all kind of bags, come out of all kind of bags, and I basically, you know, had to explain to them that coming out as a free thinker, humanist, atheist, agnostic, whatever you may want to call yourself, is social suicide. I've
yep.
lost a lot of friends and associates, and I have some family members that just, you know, they've written me off. And but the thing is that I just can't, in good conscience, I can't go on with the charade anymore. I can't
mm-hmm.
do it. And I'm surely not
right.
going to genuflect and kiss the ring of another human being. It's just not going to happen.
Right.
And
right.
basically what they're doing when they set themselves up and call themselves kings and priests, they know exactly what they're doing because, you know, you even talked about that in your book a little bit about basically how they set themselves up in those positions and see themselves as that. And when you go back and you look at how the Bible was canonized and the reasoning behind it, then you go into some of the historical aspects of it, it shows you that the kings and priests were the ones that had the divine revelation, if you will, and they were the ones in authority, whether it was moral or law or legal authority or what have you, and
mm-hmm.
they were to be bowed down to. And that's how they're setting themselves up, you know, and it's just, it's amazing the people that are falling for this. And, you know, when I point out to them how their lives have really become worse since they've been Christians, they don't see it that way. And I'm
mm-hmm.
like, you have nothing. You have nothing to show for your life. But the pastor has, you know, a Bentley, a Cadillac, a convertible two-seater Benz, two vacation homes, another home, and a golden parachute that you all don't know about in his account over in the Cayman Islands.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So when you know, when the crap hits the fan, he has his passport ready, and him and his family are going to escape unscathed.
Yeah.
Did you see that video, Kim?
Which
the
one?
The lady got the brand new video. I mean, not brand new video, brand new Bentley.
Yeah, I saw that.
Where did she get it from, Mario?
I don't know, but a tow truck brought it up to her, like a miniature mansion, brought it up, delivered it to the house, and they're talking about, see, this is what tithing and praying will do for you. You know, you'll get a Bentley and shit like that. I'm like, oh, my God, this is disgusting.
Well,
wow.
it's pretty interesting here, and to watch our nation and to watch our communities dissolve basically into these atrocities and devastation, and all people, the Christians are just saying that, well, we just got to pray harder, you know that type of thing, and there are. That's not a solution. And one of the things that we have to do as humans is we got to understand what a problem is, what causes the problem, and then decide amongst us what's the best solution at this time. Because
right.
the solution might be differently a few years from now. But at
yeah.
this particular time, what is the best solution to apply it? And that's the role we got to play as humans. But we are sitting
right.
around praying and thinking this God is going to do this. This is idiotic.
Right.
And it just hurts because of the fact that there are so many problems that we experience that are solvable if we took the time to look at it humanistically.
Right.
Exactly. Right, and that goes back to something that you said in a book, going back to when we were talking about how highly religious communities basically tend to be more apt to having high crime rates, teenage pregnancies, and a lot of other of the social, you know, issues that need to be dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
And what I find interesting is when you bring that information up to them, and you try to, you know, show them their answer is, well, God will make a way. He made a way for us. He'll make a way for them. But what they don't realize is that by either forcing those children to get married, because that's the reason why a lot of these marriages break up. They didn't want to be together in the first place.
Right.
It was just kind of thing that happened in a baby.
That's right, right.
And a lot of these people, you know, are kind of forced to procreate, whether, you know, their parents make them or they're guilted into procreating or, you know, having a baby, an unwanted child. And now we're starting to see more and more, you know, women and men, you know, basically killing their own offspring. And, you know,
yeah,
many of these people didn't want these children. So, and while I understand they want the community to grow, and I consider it as they want these children to come into this world, they can have more victims, and so that their dynasties and their fiefdoms can go on, because, of course, they're going to appoint their children and their grandchildren to
mm-hmm.
the pastorship. No, but, you know, again, why would you want these people to bring these unwanted children into the world and basically condemning them to a life of poverty? Because when these young ladies have these multiple children, pretty much they're doomed to be poor for the rest of their lives, unless they, you know, win
exactly.
the lottery, or, you know, or go to school if they have a good support base, go and continue on with their education, or in some cases you may have a rich aunt that you didn't know about and she left you everything because she felt bad for you and
mm-hmm.
wanted you to have a new life. But, you know, even with some of the people that do acquire some wealth, they lose it because they've never had anything and they haven't been taught any, you know, life, how to save money, how to invest their money properly. And it's a perpetual cycle of poverty, a perpetual cycle of just,
right.
you know, misery. And, I mean, these are things that can be solved. They can be solved.
Well, every Sunday they go and they hear certain messages. The message is, be fruitful and multiply. God will make a way.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have got to learn how to suppress this incredible human nature called sex.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Now how does anybody figure out how to do that? So here you got this be fruitful and multiply over here, but then you're going to hell if you have sex before you get married.
Right.
And then but overall, God's going to make a way for you anyway, so go on and do it. So
right.
most of us that have this stay within the religion, I think, basically experience insanity.
Right.
Exactly.
about with insanity, and we are insanity or some form of mental illness.
There you go, bingo.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
And I've been saying that for a long time because there are, in my opinion, in my observation, there are a lot of bipolar and schizophrenic people in the church, and they are, I wouldn't say that they're hiding behind religion, but
mm-hmm.
they're trying to find some type of peace, some type of tranquility and solace behind the religion. And that goes back into another term, you know, that I like to use, which is codependency transference.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people that have the alcohol and the drug and sex issues, what they'll do is they'll give that up, but they substitute it with Jesus.
Right.
Or God, and basically the pastor. And
mm-hmm.
that's the reason why it's so dangerous when one of these leaders fall, because now the hopes of the people have fallen. So
right.
then they have a
right.
choice. They can either forgive that person and move on, or in some cases they return back to their old ways, never having gotten to the root of the problem as to what's causing that issue.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, going back to the bipolar disorder and the, you know, the schizophrenia, again, in many of these religions, they discourage the people from getting mental health care, but they've caught on to it lately, so that's why they go to these online schools and get their little certificate and counseling, and they're trying to counsel them from a biblical standpoint, which will not work because, again, you're compounding the issue.
Right.
You know, but they, again, they don't want the people to get well, because if the people are sane and using logic and common sense and, you know, on the right path and are walking with a clear mind, a clear conscience, and a clear heart, they won't be able to manipulate and control them.
Right.
And isn't that the
right.
same thing that's going to happen as if we continue to allow religion to be the dominant message in our education system too. So these charter schools and the promotion of the homeschooling from that standpoint, because the data continues to tell us that most of the homeschools are started because of religious influence. So if these things are going to dominate our education system, then we're just going to promote more mental illness.
All right. The thing that always bothered me was the fact that believers have no survivor's guilt at all. It's like if you rescue, like if you're on a boat of 1,000 people and you and 2 other people survive, you are happy, jumping, and joyful, and happy that you survived because somebody rescued you but left everybody else to die.
Mm-hmm.
And they're completely comfortable with the idea that they believe that they're going to be saved, but many of the other people that they know and care about and love are going to burn alive in hell.
Mm-hmm.
They're completely okay with that, you know, and they don't even think about it. It's not even a thought to them, because as long as they get to their salvation, then they feel like their favor and everything is going to be all milk and honey from there on. And, you know, I said it jokingly one time, if I'm going to hell, it's going to be so funny to me to see how many believers thought they were safe sitting down there with me.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And, you know, I used to tell believers, and they would get angry with me, and I used to say, well, all the fun people are going to be in hell anyway, so all you windbags can go on up to heaven and preach to each other, because that's what you're doing on the earth anyway.
Yeah. It's probably going to be very boring up there.
Exactly.
But I think you're right, Mario, in the aspect of the survival skills and the attitudes and the things that they have to that should be taught to them in regards to what is their role and the positions they should take in regards to their relationship with society, regardless of their religious perspective. Because when you're in a situation with other people, then your responsibility is to the other people in some form or fashion. That's the most important thing about recognizing the relationship we have in terms of knowing your individual's responsibility and then knowing your responsibility to society, and that means to other people.
Right.
And religion should not play a part in that at all.
Right.
Exactly.
So your survival skills should kick in, and that should just transcend to your relationship with other people automatically.
Right.
But they're not taught that.
And no, because, again, it's not conducive to the message and the methodology of those in leadership, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to teach those things because, you know, if the people start realizing or have any type of inkling that, you know, they're relatively normal and that all of this other stuff isn't necessary, then, you know, we're taking away jobs, you know, from the leadership. We're taking away their money. We're taking away their livelihood. It's really interesting because from some of the behavior that I've noticed from different people, especially in the leadership, and this is stuff that I've seen firsthand, if it was not for that Bible and their income potential, you all would be dealing with a lot more sociopaths.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, you definitely would. I've seen some stuff. Okay.
Yeah, that's
it is amazing.
It is pretty scary. That is unfortunate too. But it within the aspect of how we are negligent with our response to our society responsibility, we are caught in this another state of confusion from the aspect that individualism makes the difference. And so
right.
you can be all you can be if you work hard and do all these things, you're going to be able to achieve this stuff. But how your relationship is to your fellow man in society is not really encouraged a lot. And
right.
until some devastation happened, the earthquakes in Haiti or the floods and the tsunamis and the Hurricane Katrina's, when those kind of things happen, then we automatically respond because it's so overwhelming. But
right.
things that happen on a daily basis, we don't respond because our individualism keeps us into a mindset of, well, I'm going to get mine, you get yours.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what's being taught in these churches, and in particular the prosperity churches.
Mm-hmm.
They are taught, I have mine, now you got to go out there and get yours.
Mm-hmm.
And it encourages a lot of that behavior. The competition amongst the members just to seem prosperous is ridiculous. And then also what I like to call, you know, some of the members who vie for the attention of the pastor and the leadership, I like to call them sycophantic flunkies, because that's pretty much what many of them are.
Right.
And it needs to stop. It needs to stop because in a lot of cases it's all smoke and mirrors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a little step routine going on there. And outwardly they look like they're prosperous, but, you know, the minute this recession hit, the majority of those people pretty much were almost homeless because they didn't have any money to make. If they missed a paycheck, if they missed one or two paychecks, that's it. Their lives are wiped out. And for what? Who are you trying to impress? It means nothing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, in the big picture, the big scheme of things, none of that means nothing, especially when you're dealing with a community of people that haven't necessarily been taught fiscal responsibility. And to a certain degree, have not necessarily been taught, you know, to a certain extent, social responsibility, because there was a quote in your book from Robert Greene Ingersoll in which he was basically apologizing to, you know, the blacks.
Oh, yeah, that was that was a powerful piece of writing he did with that. Boy.
Exactly.
The Letter to Colored People?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it basically, you know, he was saying to the colored people or to the black people to not use the same type of sadistic, you know, mechanism on, you know, white people that were used on them. So he was appealing to our more compassionate, forgiving side,
mm-hmm.
you know, which was, you know, it was admirable for him to admit the atrocities that had been committed. But, you know, it's I don't know, I don't even know how to put it. We have to clean up our communities. We have to clean up our minds. We have to clean up our communities. We have to move forward because, you know, while a lot of other races, you know, we complain about other people coming to this country and progressing and how we aren't, it's not their fault. It's ours. We don't want to put our money together to, you know, to start businesses. You know, there's no reason for these other cultures to come in and start a grocery store in our neighborhood, and then your cousin Joe puts one next door, but no one wants to go to Joe's store. They want to go to the other store because for some reason they think that his apples are, you know, greener or firmer. You know, but
right.
that's another thing that I kind of fault the church on. For all the money that they're getting, you know, because I believe over the past 10 years they've had over $500 billion with the people. Dollars in contributions. Why haven't they opened up grocery stores in the neighborhood? Because not only will that produce revenue, it will provide jobs and, you know, income base, all of that. But no one is looking at that. You know, the churches are sucking revenue out of these communities because they're not paying property taxes on that church. And
mm-hmm.
most of these churches own a lot of property, and they're not paying property taxes on that either. And then the people in the community, they can't understand why they get the worst teachers, why, you know, at their school maybe the pools aren't working. The kids don't have the equipment that they need, whether it's gym equipment or computers or what have you. That's because the revenue, the money, isn't going back into the community the way that it should. I think they should take tax-exempt status away from these churches and force them to start paying taxes.
Yeah.
And I bet you most of these churches would close up, but the state of the community is based on the fact it's all about money. It's all about money.
Right.
And going back to what, you know, what we were saying about, you know, Obama and his five spiritual advisors and all of that, Obama made a promise to deal with the faith-based initiative, and he backed out of that. He backed out of that. And I believe that the faith-based initiatives need to be abolished. They need to stop that. Because why are they giving money to these churches when they already have, you know, the tax-free status, and they're taking money, they're not putting anything back into the community? Why do they need government funds to go out there to continue to brainwash and to hurt the people?
Right.
And that's something that I've never understood. And those same funds are not available to people who are not of faith, which I believe, you know, is unfair as well. If you're going to have that information out there, then it should be available for everyone. But that's the reason why a lot of these churches are falling in with the religious right, to tie that back into the earlier conversation, is because of the faith-based initiative. It's because of the religious right. That's how the faith-based initiative came into play. And with Obama, he even kind of cleared up a lot of the red tape for the churches to be able to get to those grants. So it's a no-win
situation. I mean, they just that means that particular initiative says that we have no interest in what the separation of church and state really means. That's what they're saying, and it's amazing that within the framework of government and constitution and all these things that's supposed to govern us, then we can blatantly ignore those and do things, and our majority people says that's okay. And that's what happens when our different administrations and basically our politicians incorporate so many things that are just totally against principles, but we don't do anything about it. And the faith-based initiative was one of those.
Exactly, exactly, and it needs to be dealt with and, you know, addressed.
Mm-hmm. But and it should be addressed just strictly based on principle. In terms of, okay, what does it say? What's right about it? What's wrong about it? And analyze it from that standpoint, and then move on. But when so many people are doing these things for their own basic benefit, political use, and those type of things, then what happens is that so many people can be manipulated to see it, to sway it to a different meaning.
Exactly.
And too much of our lives are being treated that way. And that's what's so difficult.
You have a juggernaut to take down with a lot of that stuff, because you got some Christian organizations that are very powerful, man, scary powerful. And if you're trying to threaten their bread and butter, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, you are going to have a serious fight in your ass. So, it's a lot of that stuff. I mean, I don't even drink very much, but I don't understand why Georgia is still a state in which you still have to wait. You cannot buy alcohol on Sunday. You know, stupid little stuff like that.
Oh, boy, yeah.
You know, just stupid little stuff like that. I remember there was such an uproar when someone had proposed bringing a porno store closer to Conyers, where I grew up at, and that was such a big uproar. Never mind the fact that 9 out of 10, most of the people who were voicing concern about it had porn on the computer at the time. Mm-hmm. We're not even going to talk about that. But, you know, saying the sight of it in plain sight, that, look, this is a sinner of debauchery and sex, you know, I'm pretty sure people are going to want to go there. You know what I'm saying? I want to go there myself, but I can't because I'm supposed to be this pillar, this ministerial type figure. Yeah, I got to speak against it in public while I'm doing my dirt on behind closed doors.
Right.
You
right.
know?
Well,
so,
yeah, they just ordered from online.
Right, yeah, exactly.
But there are so many of these things that are that they want to talk about and discuss, and they want to talk about it from a moral issue, and that's why I really appreciated that article that we talked about the political issues that the black church has been silent about. And you getting to the issues that we sort of touched on, like divorce. Well, I mean, I don't consider that to be a moral issue. I just consider
right.
it I could just consider it two people that decided they can't get along anymore. And so you do that with businesses. Partnerships occur. Partnerships break up for various reasons. And I don't see any moral issue that has anything to do with. Because what has been, we've just been misled to by this Bible that says that you're supposed to marry and stay married to that person for the rest of your life. So, but this is the misleading of religion. And there are so many things like that religion has kind of influenced, but it's influenced us so negatively until we can't really evaluate whether these things are real problems or not. And so someone having a divorce, that doesn't affect me. That's no problem to society just because they decide to have a divorce. Now, the problem will occur when this couple or these two individuals can't resolve how to take care of the kids.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That becomes the issue. So, but in terms of a divorce, that's no problem to me.
Right, exactly, because that particular couple, that's their issue to deal with. It doesn't have anything to do with you and your household.
None whatsoever, and it really doesn't affect society. And that's the way I was able to draw my conclusion in terms of how I've learned to be acceptable now to homosexuality. It doesn't affect me. It's no threat to me. It's no threat to our society either.
Nope.
Exactly.
But when the Bible tells you something about it, then you trying to adhere to this crap. Then you got to start passing judgment and think that you got to impose some kind of law.
True.
Right.
And that's the problems that religion imposes on us. And long as we let religion stay in its prominent position, we're going to be, our society and the way we learn to live is going to always be distorted.
Right.
Very much so. Very much so. And I also wanted to bring up a point that you had in your book, which is very important to me. And over here it says, at what age should a child be exposed to the brutalities, contradictions, and vagueness of the Bible? And the reason why I bring that up is because a lot of the behavior that I'm seeing with a lot of these children and some adults is they've become so desensitized and so desensitized to what's happening in this world. It's like, what happened to your empathy? And a lot of the things that they see in the Bible, just like it shows how, you know, Paul was once killing Christians and then he became, you know, the leading Christian authority. And then you have David, who was just out there, you know, and was an adulterer, and then set the woman's husband up to get killed. And then when we see this behavior in our neighborhood, and then they turn around and say, well, God forgives me, and just like he forgave David. You know, how can you argue with that? You know, I mean, you can.
Right.
Because, you know, what is right and wrong is wrong. And, you know, in some cases, these people's morality compass needs to be reset.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you start teaching that to children and they grow up thinking that and believing that, you know, it kind of sets them up to have mental health issues.
Mm-hmm.
It sets them up to pretty much, you know, kind of play victim to the system in which, you know, some of them end up, you know, in the penal system. And we all know that the recidivism rate is really high. And it goes back to, they'll say, well, God forgives me, and the Bible says that you must forgive me. So with having that type of mentality, again, it goes back to the sociopathic tendencies, and they go out and commit these crimes and atrocities, and they think it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's dangerous. Mm.
Well, the prison ministries are well represented, so these guys are being just bombarded with the religious dogma and Bible teachings on a daily basis, and that's not good. I mean, that's a poor way to prepare these individuals to recognize something that they did wrong according to society. Now, what can they do to move back into mainstream? And the, and religion does not help them to do that at all.
Right.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't teach them life skills on, you know, and
right.
good cope mechanisms, because basically you'll have these people coming out of the penal system and they'll come back into, you know, everyday life. However, in some cases it's hard for them to find jobs unless they start their own church, and many of them do end up starting churches, but that's another discussion there. But it's hard for it's hard for them to find a job. They can find women all over the place. They never have an issue with that. And then one thing that I have to get on women's cases about with some of these men that come out of prison, you're handicapping him by not making him try to find a job or open his own businesses. Most of these convicts don't realize that it's easier for them to open a new business than to get a job.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not being taught
right.
that. They're not being taught that. But, again, you know, they come back, and it's hard for them to find a job, and then in some cases, you know, they're rejected. And that happens. I mean, if you kill the whole family
mm-hmm.
of five, you know, don't expect the one that survived to be your new best friend. That's just not going to happen.
Right.
And
right.
You, they're not taught life skills. They're not taught how, if you do happen to come up on a job or, you know, start your own business, you pay your rent and your mortgage, and then you put your bills in this, you know, particular priority, and you learn how to live from that. And then also, again, the mental health, you know, wellness that they need, they're not given that. That's something that should be required when they go to jail. But, you know, to get out of jail, how to cope with life, how to deal with their emotions, how to deal with their feelings. Because, you know, while men like to say that women are emotional, yes, we may have outbursts and say what we have to say, but with a lot of men, it's brute strength. And
mm-hmm.
when they come at each other, you know, physically or what have you, they don't realize that is an emotional response.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't know how to identify it, but they need to be taught how to live.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, you know, we have a question for you in the chat room. It says, what can be a viable alternative to church to fulfill that need for a community meeting place and good music and good food? Right, yeah, so it's interesting. Right. But, I mean, I think we all, you know, the free thinking, the free thought community, I believe we need to have more community-based solutions. We need to be a viable alternative to the church, and, you know, while it's not necessarily our responsibility to entertain people, what have you, I feel that, you know, what I want to do, I want to have my own recreation center and build it in an economically and educationally disadvantaged area and have things so that the kids can come in, get the tutoring, and have the adults come in, teach them some job skills, the ones that, you know, are working on their CD, work, have something there available. And that's something that I never understood, you know, about the church in general. There are some that have recreation centers and things like that, but you can only go to it if you're a member. What
right.
about the immediate surrounding community? You know, interestingly enough, most of these churches, the people that live in the area don't attend that local church. Why is
yeah.
that?
Right.
Well, one of the things that's a problem is the fact that they're going to evangelize, and they're going to have the Christian sermons and all that stuff is going to be incorporated into that community center. So if you have certain people that don't agree with that particular religion, then they're going to be uncomfortable with that. And that's
True.
The problem when these churches open these community centers, and a lot of them are doing it. And it makes it real difficult for people that don't agree with that to want to go there and participate in the offerings that they are trying to provide. But one of the first things that I was challenged with when I introduced my book was that a lot of my friends said that they agree with everything that I said in the book, but they can't throw away the baby with the bathwater.
Right.
And I take that to mean that they, if you don't have something to replace it with, then they're not going to get rid of it. And my contention is there's a lot of things that you can replace religion with. And one of the things that I replaced it with was humanism.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so the principles the idea that you need something to guide your thought process or your principles, there's a lot of things that you can use to create that. But
right.
I don't need a church, and
right.
I realize that I don't need the church music, and I certainly don't need fried chicken. So the idea that anytime they're going to have a fellowship function, most likely fried chicken's going to be there, because I try to eat healthy, so I don't need that either. And there's
right.
so much there's so much ways to create social mechanisms and social means until
mm-hmm.
we are taught to think that the church is the answer when it's really
right.
not necessary.
Right.
And the other thing that's kind of interesting here is that I'm a little uncomfortable because I'm active in the Humanists of Houston organization, and
mm-hmm.
when this thing that we're doing that makes me uncomfortable, and we pass this box around for donations. And so every time that happens, I'm thinking, man, I'm in church. They passing a tray. So
well,
so it just reminds me of church.
Well, with that, you know, the organization I'm with, we sometimes rent a facility. So rather than have, like, the group leaders pay for it every time out of their pocket,
yeah.
we ask for a few donations to do the pay for it. It never amounts to very much.
Right,
but it's enough
right.
to cover our use of facility for that day. And then normally our leader, like Mandela Thomas or somebody like that, will cook a meal or bring refreshments, and it's a way to reimburse that person for their time and effort for going, you know, doing the extra duty than instead of us just showing up there and sitting around talking.
Yeah,
so,
but I understand the need and why you do it. I'm just talking about the method. So,
right.
So when they when it comes in front of me, I have this church flashback. That's what I'm saying. So
so your post traumatic stress disorder from the church. That's funny. And you talked about that a little bit, you know, in the book when you were talking about, you know, basically going back to slavery and, you know, the post-traumatic stress disorder. And, you know, this is going out to a friend in the chat room. She'll understand what I'm talking about here. But with a lot, with some of the people in the church, basically, let me go to the page because I want to make sure I get the right point. Basically, some of the behavior is from being taught for several generations to basically adhere to Christianity because they were forced into that religion. And Sticky Blue talked about it a little bit in her book as well, how in some cases they were promised their freedom if
mm-hmm.
they converted to Christianity. And then in some cases, if they fought in certain wars, how they would be given their freedom as well. In, I guess they probably fought in the wars but still professed Christianity because they wanted to be free. No one wanted to work under those particular conditions there. And in your book, you're talking about, you know, how they survived the voyage and basically how could humans treat other humans so harshly and equate them with livestock. And to this day, do you believe that that post-traumatic slave syndrome or stress disorder has an impact on what's happening in our communities and why we are so dependent on the
mm-hmm.
church.
Yeah, still
mm-hmm.
there. Yeah. that slavery is amazing. It just it has been able to it's been able to be passed on through generations. And because we just can't, we haven't been able to find all of the solutions to give us that give us the answers that we can use to be totally free and walk away from those things. And I think that's part of what our challenges are in our relationship with white people. And because they don't, I think in their cases, they don't want to understand it. They don't want to remove the pain from it. So it's something that that's got to take place within our own community to relieve ourselves from it. And we've got to be able to understand it more and be able to help each other to alleviate that. Because it's a serious pain.
Exactly,
right.
Exactly. Going to, you know, your book here, and it says, this country was built on the back of African slaves, my ancestors, and its history will forever be marred by this horrendous institution, primarily due to the nation's inability to assist the children of slaves in coping with the trauma. And I gave that quote to basically tie it back into what I was saying earlier about the mental health issues and getting to the root of the issues and, you know, basically, you know, helping these people, just people in general, because, you know, we all could use some, you know, good therapy every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
But help people find out how to cope with life, how to move on, you know, and the issues, you know, what's driving that need for the drugs, the alcohol, and, you know, the abuse of sex. And it's, I don't know, I just feel that, you know, over the years, especially after Reagan was in office, you know, a lot of the mental health care facilities were basically shut down. A lot of the transient hotels and housing was basically shut down as well. And they've kind of created, you know, a situation in which these people were turned out into the street.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not getting the help that they need, whether it's mental health help or housing or, you know, job, economic, any type of help of that nature. But the rest of us have to deal with, you know, certain people and their issues. And it gets more difficult. And, you know, mental health care definitely needs to be addressed. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, I will give Obama credit for that he's providing mental health care for the troops, because, you know, a lot of people don't realize a lot of these troops are committing suicide.
Mm-hmm.
But going back, you know, mental health care is definitely needed, but in regards to religion, with some of these people, that's the glue that's holding everything in place. So if we were to, let's just say, plant the seed and they left the church, are we really prepared for what may happen, the type of people? Because, again, they don't have the Bible suppressing those sociopathic tendencies. Are we really ready to deal with them? I mean, we're already dealing with them, but, you know, you as a Christian, if I wasn't a Christian, I would do this, that, and the other. So if we take the Christianity part away, will they actually do it, and are we prepared to deal with that?
Well, I guess that the question regarding that is, when they walk away from it, how did that happen? And what kind of preparation did they make themselves in order to walk away? Because the question surrounding that in terms of being prepared or being ready for them is going to be based on the same scenario in regards to people leaving prison, and I don't think that's quite the same. Because I think what happens, and I have to relay it to my own situation, in that when I left, the freedom was just so incredible until I could analyze things so much better. And what used to be a challenge or a problem for me was no longer that way. So the things that I was seeing to be an issue was no longer really an issue. And so my coping mechanism was just strengthened, because the things that was causing me stress as a Christian don't cause me stress anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay,
that might be the way it happened for a lot of people. I mean, I don't know. I mean, but it could possibly be. I mean, I certainly don't see myself being anybody special or unique, other than the fact that I saw it and I responded, because I've always been the guy that would prefer to be free and truthful about life.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think for me, you know, the thing about it is, I don't think I need anything to fill in any void, because I've never been the type of person to run with a group of people or to feel like I need to have something to fill in another area. Maybe when I was younger and I was dumber and everything,
yeah.
But as I began to get more older, and the fact that I was into religion, my grandma was a Jehovah's Witness, but I never really totally let it consume my life and everything.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that I don't have it doesn't bother me one bit. You know, I don't, even on in certain groups, I try not to be the a blind follower in which I follow and agree with everything that's being said, because I don't want to lose the ability to see that this is wrong or that somebody is wrong or somebody's saying something I don't agree with.
Right.
So, you know, if you need something, a codependency like that, it can be dangerous, because if you don't have one thing to follow, you're going to follow something else. And who's to say that that's going to be worse than religion?
Right.
That
right.
you just left, you know?
Right, right. So. In fact, I had this conversation yesterday with my daughter. And so as we are talking to her, she's 25 now, and I told her, I said, you have got to just learn how to make decisions, and you do that either through experience or through an acquisition of information and facts, and your decisions sometimes are not going to be good ones, but the most important thing about doing something or making a decision is to knowing exactly why you did it. And even if you do something stupid, understand why you did that stupid thing.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, when it's time to make adjustments or to understand that there are obviously going to be some things that you're going to have to deal with because of that, then you just confront it and move on. But if you don't ever understand why you made your decision and what led to that, then you're going to always be in a state of confusion.
Right.
Exactly.
So exactly. That's why, I mean, I just hope that I can live to see a majority of people move away from religion. It
right.
appears that I may not get a chance to experience that, but I hope I get a chance to see a majority of people move away.
Right.
Right.
Because
our society is
going to be so much better.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, like in your book, you were talking about how you feel that, you know, some people are addicted to religion. And
right.
I believe that to be true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so that's the reason why I was saying, you know, they were once addicted to drugs, alcohol, or sex. In some cases, you know, again, that, you know, that transference there. So now they found Jesus and a pastor. And so now that becomes their new addiction, because I've seen people, if the doors of the church was open, they were there. They neglected
mm-hmm.
their families. They neglected their jobs. They neglected everything in life because they had to be at that church.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, my thing is what's driving you? Why do you feel that you have to be there? Why do you feel that that is needed? And in your book, you were talking about, you know, the Hebrews and Exodus. And it never happened. It actually never happened. And Jewish people are starting to admit that the Exodus never happened.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you try to tell that to a group of religious people, they're not going to believe you.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. But we are confronted with this daily now. I mean, because we got this threat of war because of Israel over there saying that that land belongs to them because of God. And that's a problem. But
yeah.
who's going to confront that? America sends
yeah.
them billions of dollars to protect and support them. And this is all religion. But sure, people will say, well, it's not religion, it's tribal. Yeah, but where did that come from? And what did
religion.
It create?
Religion, that's what it all boils down to. That's the core of
uh-huh.
that particular religion. Exactly.
Right.
That's why I say, well, get to the root of the problem. That's it right there in that respect.
Right.
And when you try to point that out, you know, it turns into a major debate, and they don't necessarily see it that way, but they've been conditioned. They've been conditioned to basically, you know, acquiesce, lay down, and do whatever, you know, is told of them. They're not necessarily taught how to think for themselves. As a matter of fact, thinking for themselves is discouraged. And if you bring up to certain Christians about logic and common sense, they'll tell you that it has no place in the church. And I'm like, why is that?
Yeah, that's pretty sad. Pretty sad.
Get mad. Real mad when you bring that up. You know, get really mad and tell you that you have no business and that you're being used and that the devil is speaking through you. And it's just absolutely amazing. And, you know, they're being tricked. Like when this recession first started, you know, going back to what you were talking about, you know, how the black church is a wealth creator, how they tricked their members into believing that there was no recession.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Amazing.
That is probably the most pathetic thing. And the church is sitting there in probably the most strategic position to assist our black community with so many things, assisting with the unemployment issues, healthcare issues, all these things that they talk about that are moral issues. If the church was anything close to being truthful, then answers can be provided so that people could move into a better life condition. But
right.
It has no intentions of doing that. It has no interest in that. It only has the purpose of oppression, exploitation, and upholding that pastor's financial stability. That's the only purpose the church provides.
As long as you keep people believing that they need a weekly infusion of salvation, you know, it's like an inoculation of some sort, you know. As long as you keep them believing that every week they need that, you know, you're going to forever control them. You know, my grandma being a Jehovah's Witness, as much as I love her to death, you know, I listen to her tell me, you know, how much she loves Jehovah Almighty God and how much he does for her. Like, especially when she had cancer, she thoroughly believed that it was God that saved her. Never mind the fact that, you know, oftentimes she had to bum rides to get to take the chemotherapy. You know, and
boy.
I try not, you know, yeah, you know, because we didn't have a car at the time.
Uh-huh.
And so it's like, you know, if God cares so much about you, you know, and I can't say this to her, but I'm like, if God cares so much about you, why did you get cancer to begin with? And why are you having to go through such hell to get there to get the treatment?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, did he just, you know, did he plan in advance to have this one guy come from India to learn American medicine and go through 8 years of schooling along with 5-6 other nurses who have to operate the machinery that somebody had to build in advance of your chemotherapy that you would need at this moment? I mean, is that what that's his plan?
Right.
You know, but like I said, I can't say that to her. She was pretty disappointed.
And you trying to get hit in the head with a turkey leg during Thanksgiving, you say something like that.
Yeah, those. I mean, those are the things, man. I mean, it is just so amazing. I mean, I had a similar situation with my sister, and she struggled with flooding when that flood hit Nashville last spring, and her basement was just totally wiped out, and so she was struggling with some issues regarding funds to be able to repair and replace the things that was destroyed during the flood. And so she's very, very religious, right? So she's at church whenever it opens. And so I'm trying to figure out, okay, well, let God do it for you. Let him provide everything you need to, you know, solve the problem. You know, you don't need. She was asking me to donate, right? So I, you know, I'm wanting to tell her to let God do this. Don't be asking the heathen.
Right.
Because
right.
Your money should be tainted. They shouldn't want your money.
That's right. Yeah.
Right.
So anyway, so I finally decided to donate and contribute to help her out. Well, she swears that when she got my check, that it was exactly what she needed, and God provided it.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
now that's insanity. But yet still, she believes that it was because mm-hmm. God touched me that I would send the right amount she needed to finish that work.
Yeah, you could have just done it out of the kindness of your own heart.
Yeah, and it's like, come on now, this is the kind of stuff that our people are dealing with on a regular
mm-hmm.
basis.
Right.
But yet and still,
exactly.
they employ God that this is what He does at the right time.
Right.
Exactly. And they'll tell you that in a heartbeat. And going back to what you just said there. Yeah, they'll get up and they'll tell those stories, and I like to call them Testa liars. That's what I call them. And then, you know, the scripture that they love, the quote, call those things that be not as though they are. And I said, so you're a sanctified liar, you know, because
mm-hmm.
that's
mm-hmm.
what scripture is doing. It's like you're either lying or you're trying to conjure up, you know, a witch's spell. That's how I see that right there, even though
right.
I don't believe witchcraft or anything like that. But, you know, you start talking Christians about witchcraft, freaks them out. But basically, you know, it's you know, spiritual lines, spiritually, you know, it's just amazing. You know, the intellectual dishonesty is prevalent. And when you point it out to them, they find all kinds of excuses as to why they have been ordained
mm-hmm.
for such a time as this, for this to come forth,
mm-hmm.
for them, the position that they're in, and never mind that, you know, everything else in your life is going straight to hell in a handbasket, but you were ordained for this time, and I want to know, why is it that your God didn't prepare you for this time in your physical life, but spiritually you feel that you're on top of it, you know,
right.
that this is what, you know, He wants you to do. And they're not living in this world. They're not living in this reality. And it really hurts me, and it makes me sad because
mm-hmm.
I meet really good people, because I know some really, really good people, sweet people.
Oh, yeah.
And,
oh, yeah. It's a lot.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, because my sister's a good person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what's so amazing about this is the fact that, I mean, she gives a lot of money to the church.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And so my point would be, well, why did you not put that money in savings, and you would have had the money for accidents and things that happen that you don't anticipate? Why
right.
can't you live a life like that? So
exactly.
when things happen at the house, the water heater goes out or the air conditioning system goes out, the money is there for you to replace it.
Right.
Exactly.
Well, you know, they always say, you know, that money is for God. And I'm like, well, what does an immortal who doesn't live on this earth need with money anyway?
Right.
Exactly.
You
know, why is he such a bad, you know, financial planner that he's always in need of money? And why didn't he create
yeah.
a money tree?
Yeah.
You know, since he created everything, we should have money trees in our backyard. At least the pastor should, somebody.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, I've ticked off many a pastor, and I used to always say, if that sowing seed thing worked, why aren't they sowing it into good ground? Why must we hear about the church light bill? Why must we hear about this? You should be sowing your money into good ground and be at the door handing out bags of money. Because if you go back to the Bible, because they love to use that Malachi 3 and 8, but I've forced some pastors to go through the whole chapter.
Oh, okay.
And you want to talk about it? Let's talk about it all. And
right.
Basically, they should be handing out bags of money because, you know, their responsibility, if we're going to, you know, take it back and play on their field,
mm-hmm.
their responsibility is to help the homeless, to help the widows and widowers, and more so the widows,
mm-hmm.
and then help children considered orphans, and any child that did not have a father, that was considered an orphan. because of the cultural background of the people that wrote the Bible. So,
mm-hmm.
but you know, that's what that money is for. That's there to help those people. And I'm just not seeing that. I'm seeing them take advantage of a lot of the, you know, older people. How are you demanding that grandma and grandpa tithe off their Social Security check? How are you demanding that people tithe off their unemployment check? They only give you a dollar a week to begin with, so you want 10 cents of that dollar?
You're right.
They can it's absolutely amazing. But, you know, we're down to our last 30 seconds here, so I just wanted to thank you, you know, Mr. Mario and Mr. Wright here. Thank you for, you know, joining us today and being a part of this show. And I truly enjoyed it. And, you know, we definitely have to do this again. And, you know,
well, it's my pleasure. I appreciate the invitation and the opportunity. It's great to just be able to share the message. And I just hope that we get more opportunities to share and talk to more people about it, because it's a necessary conversation. That's the way I put it. We can't afford to be silent about this. We have to talk about it.
Exactly. And it needs to be talked about. It needs to, you know, the issues need to be confronted. And we in the secular community, we need to work again on solutions-based, you know, community resolutions. We need to get together and, you know, try to find ways to offer an alternative and just get out here and work in the community, because we can no longer, in good conscience, point the finger at the church and show their deficiencies and their fallibilities when we aren't out here doing anything. And there are a lot of atheists and, you know, secular organizations that are in the community, but
mm-hmm.
they're not well known. So, you know, of course, the first thing Christians are going to say is, what are you all doing? And
mm-hmm.
there's a lot that we're doing out here, but we need to get out there and promote it more, and we need to bring up more organizations and get out there that help the people, because it's imperative. You know, we can't afford to really wait anymore. It's too many hurting people, and hurt people hurt other people. And we have to stop it somewhere.
Right. And that was part of my motivation for the idea that I brought up in February about the Day of Solidarity.
Yes,
and we're going to be talking more about that in the next couple of months, because I think it's important that we are consistently meeting amongst ourselves to enhance the message in our relationships, but also to encourage give us all more strength, basically, to go out and talk to the religious people and share what we're doing. So hopefully you all will join me with that for next February to really promote the Day of Solidarity.
Yes,
okay.
Sir. Just make sure you put the information up there, and I'll promote it. And, you know, definitely, because, you know, we have some projects coming up as well that definitely
right.
I have coming up soon a youth panel.
Mm-hmm.
I'm putting together some of the, you know, young adults, and I wanted to put together a young adult youth panel and so that their voices can be heard. So
oh, that's great.
Yeah, the next generation, the up-and-coming generations, so that those of us that have a little bit more sage wisdom, if you will, that we can share with them and encourage them and motivate them. Because sometimes that's all these children have. They
mm-hmm.
they aren't necessarily
right.
getting it at home.
Right.
And, you know, I just think it's important that, you know, we show them some love. And, you know, so when I get all of that together and, you know, put it out there, I'm definitely going to ask you and a few other people to write a few words of encouragement to the young people. And I'm going to do a big article on them.
Okay,
so that we
good.
Can get that out there. Yeah, you know, because,
yeah.
you know, these kids, they need the encouragement. They need the help. And many of them are brilliant, absolutely brilliant. I'll go to the mall and I'll read some of the stuff, and I'm like, this is amazing, you
mm-hmm.
know. And, you know, so it's just, it's important. So, you know, while we encourage them to do that, you know, we can do some of the other things we need to do in the background, you know, and move forward, because,
right.
you know, the time is now. The time is now. It's not us destroying the church or pointing out or exposing, you know, their fallibilities. They're doing a good job all by themselves.
That's
you know,
right.
We don't have to do it.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But then, you know, there are issues within our particular community that needs to be dealt with as well. And what I mean by that is some of the people that are just transitioning out of the church and transitioning into free thought, you know, a lot of them are still going through the 5 or 7 stages of grief.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of them, I see some of the anger and the bitterness and some of the hatred. And I can understand it. I was once there because, you know, you felt as though you were tricked. You were hoodwinked.
Yeah,
you
right.
know? So you have to deal with those issues. And so, you know, there are some things that we need to deal with internally as well.
Right.
Because some things that, you know, it just needs to be dealt with. It needs to be confronted because being out there and being antagonistic towards the Christians is counterproductive. We're not
mm-hmm.
going to be able to make any headway. But in addition to that, you know, these individuals need to deal with whatever issues that they're dealing with because they're not going to get any better. And again, hurt people hurt other people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So,
right.
Yeah. We got to work both sides of it.
That's for sure. Yeah. Well, okay, well, good. I certainly enjoyed it. Look forward to more communication with both of you. And Mario, continued success over there in Atlanta with the black non-believers.
Yes, sir. And thank you again, and definitely, you know, we'll definitely be in touch. And,
okay.
You know, go forth, okay?
All right, good. And so I'm just right down the street from you, so I look forward to hearing from you.
Yes, sir, you shall, okay? And you take care. Thank you so much yet again.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.